on the beginnings of civilization, as best they can be figured. Mankind appeared rather suddenly and out of nowhere on the face of this earth. The earth itself, when examined from outer space, is completely different from all of the other planets and astral bodies surrounding it. It is at once unique and extra beautiful. Upon this tapestry, as it were, arrives mankind. The first shore remains are found in ancient Sumer, the land of the Agads and Ur of the Chaldeans, and ancient Sumer becoming the ancient city-state of Babylon, and thereupon giving birth to the Hittites and Amorites and the Assyrians. These earliest peoples very rapidly developed a form of writing and wrote complex novels and kept meticulous records every bit as modern as ancient and Egyptian or ancient Greek records, which form the nexus between the ancient and modern worlds. They are writing algebraic texts and texts on geometry, appear to have been very familiar with the circle and the concept of pi. They build from mud. That is because they are living in an alluvial, i.e. flood, plain. They are a people who have a tradition of a universal deluge, although it is cast in the form of a myth of the escape from that deluge by a mythical half-man, half-god named Gilgamesh, who was warned by one of the gods. Two of the most striking aspects of the earliest civilizations, 3000 to 4500 BC, is the scale and extent of the economy as well as the military conquest. While various agrarian economies are found preceding the actual most ancient cities, military conquest is found from the very earliest of times to be what exactly it is that makes a king. For kings are found in the earliest of times, pre-Egypt, conquering neighboring tribes, mass genocide, and being worshipped as demigods, or eventually as the earthly manifestation of the gods or of a particular god. They also are found in mass burials, apparently having had their servants drugged or otherwise slain to be buried, probably alive, with the king. A callous disregard for the sanctity of life in general and human life in particular. And what were these gods? They were statues. Statues that they dressed in the most beautiful of clothing and gold and jewels, to which they bowed and to which they prayed. Some of these statues would act as oracles, foretelling the future and telling of many other strange things. They worshipped a fertility goddess and a demigod king. The erect penis, later found in stelae and obelisks, is a symbol of their regenerative power. The serpent, because of its ability to shed its skin and hence regenerate itself anew and repeatedly over its life, became the symbol of regeneration, as did the sun. Sun worship, as found in pre-Columbian America and in Egypt, is also found in ancient Sumer. Sun worship apparently rather quickly developed into fire worship. The sun of the night, complete with human sacrifice, again as found in both pre-Columbian Americas and ancient Egypt. The snake, regeneration, became the symbol of the fire worshippers. For example, Moloch. It should be obvious that just as the most heinous of deeds are more likely to be done at night than during the day, so the fire worshippers were more maniacal than the sun worshippers. For the fire worshipper would worship at night in order to have the full effect of the eerie lighting and ambiance created by a bonfire. We have modernly only to look at primitive tribes to get what is probably a very good idea of the kinds of things that were done, complete with sexual acting out, dancing, drunkenness, pounding of drums, or some other sort of music accompanied by erotic dancing, drugs, and more intoxicants, the likes of which we do not even know or want to know. For example, elixirs containing various combinations of hallucinogenic mushrooms and opiates or other kinds of mind-altering chemicals found in plants mixed with all sorts of other strange herbs and who knows what. You need merely consult books on casting spells and witchcraft to get an idea of the kinds of disgusting things that these people would put into these elixirs that were calculated to stupefy and numb a person so that they would further degrade themselves in a communal setting with all of the community looking on and encourage them to act out in with their very bizarre behavior. It seems too obvious to need mentioning that the fertility cult aspects of the entire society undoubtedly came into play during fire worship, giving play to the most perverse of humankind's continually wicked minds. What we today find in the darkest corners of the earth, for example, such places as New Guinea, where cannibalism is a way of life on a 1,500-mile-long island, is very similar to what is found from the earliest of times and corresponds well with what is found in the pre-Columbians, the Kali worshippers of India, and the ancient Egyptians, not to mention their many offshoots. It probably provides a darkened memory of a distant past in its ritual, colors, pageantry, music, dance, and use of intoxicants. According to this theory, mankind started out in a manner not dissimilar from primitive tribes that are still found on the earth today in such places as Africa and South America, with the religion that is found in the West Indies, voodoo or the Vodun, as the driving force. The first of these primitive tribes would have grown up in Mesopotamia, the so-called cradle of civilization. This area is not far from Africa, and it is not improbable that ancient tribal customs, religion, and looks, etc., actually derive from the most ancient of times and have a nexus with Mesopotamia, being populated as the population flowed out of the Mesopotamian plains into surrounding areas. These first persons were so-called hunter-gatherers. Man is found hunting animals from the very earliest of time. These earliest of persons, probably corresponding to the so-called Neanderthal man, lived off the land the best they were able, obtaining meat from hunting and vegetables and fruits from plants growing on the alluvial plain. As population grew, so did the ability to hunt on a grander scale. As population grew further, the entire valley became filled with tribes that were able to live off the land so well that they did not need to move, and were able to supply all of their wants and needs without having to move. They soon built mud houses, entire neighborhoods of mud houses. Some were even two- or three-storied, complete with a granary in the basement. Soon this manner of living off the land in style became known to a population that was growing so rapidly that the entire river valley was populated with little cities and villages, and people were pouring out of this area into other geographical areas neighboring Mesopotamia. It was during these times when men changed from migrating hunter-gatherers to settlers of a fertile river valley full of small city-states and agriculture that kings and governments were born of old. As various groups of these primitive tribes grew throughout the valley between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, forming the beginning of the first nation, i.e. the first civilization, they began to learn the art of murder, rape, and plunder on a grand scale. The king rules with a mace, a primitive hammer-like object. He is shown in illustrations of the time holding mace above the head of his captives, holding his arm up high as he begins the blow that will smash in his captive's head with his mace. Surely this is large-scale murder. The interesting thing about these earliest kings was that they would prey on surrounding groups. They would murder the man, murder whatever woman no one wanted for repeated raping and gang raping, and steal all of the property. This type of plundering became so commonplace so early that it was not long after the invention of villages and towns that men began to build, of necessity, larger and larger walls to keep these persons out of their land and possessions. In this way, each city became a city-state, and each city-state had a rule of its own, and each ruler ruled on behalf of a deity, in whose behalf a cultic center would be instituted, complete with a temple built of mud and dedicated to that deity, whose spirit would pass on to successive kings. Each city-state became a vast collection, first of grains, meats, and hides, and eventually into shoes, clothing, and home appliances, pretty much the same as one would imagine a medieval marketplace or a modern Middle Eastern open-air marketplace would have. The city would also become a place where treasures could be collected and protected. That is to say, the city would become a treasure storehouse of every kind of thing that could be obtained by the members of that tribe. Along with booty comes the need to have persons protect the ill-gotten gain. The very same soldiers who raped and pillaged make the best guards that money can buy, as long as you can keep them from shooting you in the back due to a higher bid from someone else. So these people are put into a different color and type of uniform and called the police. While they are the best guards, they are also, by training in nature, have a complete and utter disrespect for law. They believe that they are the law because they are, in effect, the point where the rubber meets the road. They, in effect, are the law so long as they remain unchecked by the executive and judicial branches. So it turns out that the rudiments of civilization contain the worship of men who claim to be gods, the rule of mass murderers, the first military rulers, and thugs who are dressed in uniforms to look respectful and who are allowed to operate in this manner due to the lack of diligence on the part of nearly every elected official, every one of whom has learned early in his or her political career that you need the police vote in order to get elected on city council, and you need city council experience to get on the county board of supervisors, and you'll need the support of the police and the firemen should you hope to win any countywide election. Probably likewise for any national elective office, for the obvious statistical reasons that the policemen, the firemen, and their allies are a formidable force to go up against and a necessary prerequisite for building any kind of a lasting political presence. The military roots of many of the police officers and their elective clout tends to make the police and the district attorney much too powerful.